3 minutes after 10, and we would start recording officially. Good. Thank you so much, Christy. Good morning, everyone. I am Kamala Ramprasad De Silva, Chief Executive Officer of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. And it is my pleasure to welcome you to this morning's one-hour session on part five of the governance response to COVID-19. Employees are impacted in many ways. Some losing income, in other cases, losing their jobs altogether. However, companies need to deal with these challenges of this pandemic with prudence so as not to find themselves facing industrial court action by very unhappy employees. We know that understanding the options and making the best decision for the long term is difficult when the environment is changing almost daily, as has been happening with this pandemic. However, the CCGI has brought together a panel of experienced professionals who will offer some guidance based on their own experience. As always, when we are looking at these Thursday sessions, I like to share a little with what is happening on the global scene. So with respect to the global statistics, last week we saw that there was 1.5 million people who were affected with COVID-19, of whom 89,000 had died. Today, that number has crossed 2 million, and there have been 136,118 deaths. So clearly, the numbers are staggering. It is changing dramatically day by day. Particularly useful for us is noting what has been happening in the United States, where last week there was 435,167 cases. Today, that number is now 644,000 people. So many of us have friends and relatives. Many of our organizations are subsidiaries of US companies. Therefore, it's important for us to understand what is causing the challenge. Now, for many scientists, they're still unsure in terms of whether some of the cases are driven by reinfection or is it a relapse that persons may be facing. But strategies to flatten the curve and slow down the spread of infection will clearly be prolonged. In some cases, it may be intensified, as we have seen with Barbados. There's really a 24-hour lockdown, essentially. Thankfully, we have not moved to that place in Trinidad and Tobago as yet, because the strategies employed by government has clearly flattened the curve for us, all right? But the impact will still be felt tremendously because the stay-at-home initiative is going to remain in place in the foreseeable future. So as many of you here will know, the role of directors is to be aware of the changes in the environment and to be able to steer their company away from crisis. But the environment that is changing so constantly is making it very difficult for boards and senior managers to know properly how to respond. So that is what we would be discussing in terms of the people issues this morning. But just before I go to our distinguished panel, I would like to make a few housekeeping announcements. We would like everyone to remain on mute during the initial panel discussion. You will be invited to make contributions or ask questions, which you could type in the chat feature of Zoom even during the panel discussion. There is also an icon at the bottom of your screen to raise your hands when you want to get the moderator's attention. You will need to unmute yourself and then press the mute icon again as soon as you are done to minimize disruptive noises. As always, our technical support is provided by Christy Johnsler Crouch from SmartServe Limited. Many of you who are on our call today know Christy. Her services are outsourced and we are very pleased with the really excellent service and support she provides to the operations of the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute. So those of you who are new to this Zoom environment and would like to get online support, you can do as we did. and possibly outsource your operational support to her. Now, we'd like to share with everyone that this meeting is being recorded and that the recording will be sent to you afterwards by Christy. She will also ensure that this video recording is available on the CCGI website and so available to anyone who would like to review it. So I will turn to the panel now, but I want to emphasize that collaboration and mutual support will go a long way to help us bring the creativity and innovation that will help keep us ahead of the curve and help us to actually find opportunities which may lie in this crisis. Today, however, I want us to look particularly at some of the factors that are impacting our employees. As I mentioned before, this is part two of our focus on HR. Last week's panel discussed the fact that there may be strategies you use to motivate employees who are now working from home, strategies and tips on how to supervise employees when they're no longer under your physical guidance. Also, some strategies in terms of companies assisting their employees who have had reduced income or who they've had to send home for a while to seek the relief grants that is offered by government. Today, however, I really want us to focus on what is happening with those companies where there's no revenue coming in. Therefore, they have no money to be able to pay salaries to employees. What then are the options for those companies? So what would be the repercussion for those companies if they choose to lay off workers? What may be the opportunities for them to ensure that they protect their reputation and at the same time show compassion to their employees in this environment? So our panel today comprises Mrs. Stephanie Fingal. Sorry, Stephanie. Thank you and welcome. She's representing ECA Communications this morning, and she has a wealth of experience in the field of industrial relations. So I will be asking Stephanie to speak to us first this morning. She would be followed by Mrs. Cavell Joseph Saint-Omer. Cavell is a globally recognized human resource and industrial relations executive. She is no stranger to the CCGI since she has presented to us on the past, particularly with respect to sexual harassment in the workplace. So Cavell has a tremendous amount of experience in terms of impact on employees and how to manage the reputation of the organization. We are also very pleased to welcome this morning from Barbados, Mr. Shane Howell. He is the Chief Operations Officer of Profiles Caribbean Incorporated, but he is also the past president of the Human Resource Association of Barbados. So Shane will be sharing with us some of the strategies and tips that they are employing in Barbados as they try to manage as best as possible with their employees. Now, I just want to share, those of you who are familiar with our sessions, generally our moderator is the chairman of the CCGI, Mr. Nigel Romano. Unfortunately, Nigel was not able to join us this morning. As a result, I will be moderating today's session. So we'll go to the panel now, and I will ask Stephanie if she can share with us. I understand that the ECA had sent out some really excellent guidelines for employers. What are some of the strategies and what are some of the guidelines they should really be guided by in this environment today? So Stephanie, can we go to you first, please?
Sure. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Are you hearing me well?
Yes, I'm hearing you.
Great, yes. So I am Stephanie Fingal, and it's Ms. Kamla, Ms. Fingal, from the ECA, currently the interim CEO at the ECA, and of course I do industrial relations as well. So thank you for inviting us this morning to speak in this webinar. We have been talking about this, as you know, and as you just mentioned, our bulletin, we have been really, really exhausting the topic, but we realize it's not exhausted at all because things are turning up every single day. What we have advised really to employers is, first of all, as in, this is about governance and corporate compliance and things like that. You do have to first consider what is in that employment contract. What are the terms you have established in there? What are the terms in your policy, company policy, on work from home, on layoff, on extended employment, part-time employment, and all those things. And what we have discovered, of course, most employers, the majority, would not have anticipated things like this. However, I mentioned this before, that since ArcelorMittal's case some years ago in the steel plant, whereby there was a layoff and they asked people to go on vacation, and it was more or less forced upon the employees, the court had overturned that action by the company and restored the vacation leave and asked the company to pay the employees for layoff. And why did that occur? There was no provision in the employment contract, or there was no provision in the company policy or in the collective agreement. So some of the things the employers must do first, one of the first things is explore your employment contract, examine them well, contracts, examine your collective agreement if one is in place, or your policy. In the absence of that, because you cannot unilaterally vary employment terms and conditions, even in the midst of COVID-19, while you would anchor any considerations being made in the mandate given from government, for instance, you cannot open for business, you're not essential, you have no choice. And that kind of thing must be communicated to employees. So we first of all encourage employers to meet with employees. However you do that, if you did not do it before, because one of the things in talking about compliance and corporate governance is that an employer should be anticipating, looking at what's happening in the wider global and local landscape, and not wait for the last minute. So some persons did find themselves waiting for the last minute and could not congregate all employees, either in different groups, different branches, or whatever it is, to discuss with them the impact of COVID-19 on the business. If it is, they could not pay normal salaries and allow normal terms and conditions to exist during the period. But that is the first thing. Because your contracts or collective agreements or policies do not cover this, you do need to meet with employees. Let them get the opportunity to ask questions, be very transparent. Let them know, I mean, I encourage employers to actually give the figures. If it is your business declined by 50% or 100%, revenue has changed, don't think the employees will understand, we didn't do as well last month. You can actually put percentages and figures. People want to know those things. The reality and the transparency helps employees in accepting what you will then say. If perchance your next option is, we can allow work from home for 95% of persons, but we will need to have you use your computers, we only have so many computers, etc., etc. And we will want you, however, because there's reduced business, to probably work for half day, and we will pay appropriately because of our diminished revenue. So employees need to know, why is it you're asking me to work from home for fewer hours, and why you're going to pay me less? If you can pay, if you have the capacity to pay, we have encouraged employers to pay as much as you can, and if it's full pay, pay full pay. Why did we do that? Because when employees are not paid anything, their national insurance contributions, they're the lapses. So if you lose 6 weeks of national insurance contributions and you should fall ill a few weeks after that, you will not be able to get a claim in, because you must have 10 weeks of the 13 weeks immediately preceding that illness. The other thing is your health plan. If health plans are not paid and you want to make a claim 2 months after COVID-19, you might have lapses in the health plan, and therefore the company, the employee, is at a disadvantage. So we encourage paying something whereby you are able to continue contributions to NIS, continue contributions to health plans, and where you might have annuities or pension plans, whatever. But if you have a corporate or group life, it's going to be different. But where you have annuities, and you might possibly face a lapse if the time, if there are vesting periods and so, to try and make sure that those things don't happen, so that your employee is protected and you, the employer, shows that goodwill and compassion as we talk about, because there are legal issues associated with non-payment of NIS and all of that when it comes to claims or to annuities and retirement and all those things. So we encourage people to do that. You meet with the employees, explain everything. And then you would get after you have the questions and you have decided whether people can work from home. Some, if you are essential and you can stay in business, you might still have rostering or 2 days in the week and different things. If you can pay, you pay the full pay. If not, you determine what exactly will be paid. And you get all your employees to buy into that. after you have had a meeting and you have distilled the issues and you have advised what is going to happen, you should document. So you should keep a record of those persons who attend that meeting. Make sure that you record what took place, and then you document it and have every employee read, understand, and sign as having read and understood and accept those terms and conditions. Now, the question is, how do I do that? Particularly, people are remote. They're not at work. So one of the first things you also should have done is get email addresses, WhatsApp addresses, etc., and make sure that you have some form of communication contact that you can communicate. We have lots of technology to allow everyone to see it and to acknowledge receipt and acceptance via some channel in today's world of technology. So you have to be very, you know, explore. We talked about the IT support. Explore what is possible by virtue of the technology available. People talk about vacation leave as well. Vacation leave has always been and will continue to be mutually agreed upon between employee and employer. And if your company has policies and you have contractor agreements and so collective agreements, you can't just deviate from that and enforce or force employees you are being sent on vacation leave. You're never sent on vacation leave. So that you will let employees know. If perchance some person say, listen, I prefer to take vacation leave and get my full pay for the period, if it is that you are telling me I'm only going to have to work half day. Once a company can afford it, you can ask the employee, no problem. You apply for your vacation leave. You then have no work to do. You don't have to join any meetings, and I will pay you your salary for your vacation period. If, however, your company does not have the money, you then can tell the employee, sure, you can proceed on vacation because vacation is always paid. So those are the kinds of things you have to consider in making a decision as what will apply in your organization. And then you come to that very difficult decision. If business has really shut down, work from home is not possible, there is no vacation leave, there is no money to pay people, you will have to implement a temporary layoff. And layoff is always temporary in the scheme of things that we're talking about, whereby if you have to have a layoff beyond 3 months, you then get into the realm of retrenchment. So that for the layoffs, again, if there is no provision in all those contracts and collective agreements and policies, you will have to discuss that with the employees and let them understand that it is going to be without pay. You must indicate the period of time expected and let the employees know that you will communicate with them before the end of the period. It should be no more than 3 months, et cetera, et cetera. And I suggest you get some legal or IR support such as ours to draft those letters to the employees, because while you speak, you must confirm in writing so that employees have something documented. And those are the important things in order for you to limit the risk of mitigation. Because we understand in industrial relations that regardless of what you do, an employee has the right to take a matter as a dispute if he or she so chooses. So in ensuring that you limit that risk or reduce that risk, you seek the relevant advice in this layoff. Now, during the layoff, as I said, you will continue to communicate with employees. Some things have happened where employees have laid off and then they want employees to come back to work in between. Even in that, you write the employee indicating that should during the layoff period, work in some form should resume and we will call you out and we will pay appropriately. So you anticipate those things and you address them one time in your layoff letter. And of course, you let them know it is important that you don't wait for the last day of a layoff to say, hey, we might have to retrench. If that is anticipated at all from the beginning, you need to start putting things in place and considering how you're going to implement, notify, etc., should a retrenchment take place. So Kamala, give me the sign if I'm to stop. Should I stop now?
No, actually, no, this is extremely interesting. And I think this particular point is one that persons would want some guidance on, this 3 month period in terms of when it is you are going to be able to lay off people. So, but maybe we can, in fact, pause there for a little bit. Let's have Cavell and then Shane, and we'd allow the questions to go down this particular point as well. All right?
Certainly.
Thank
certainly.
You so much. Yes. So, Cavell, can we get your opening remarks?
Sure. Morning, everyone. And good Stephanie morning. Actually kicked it off quite well in terms of setting some of the legal considerations employers have to take in consideration with addressing how we treat with workers during this critical period in time, right? And we have to recognize that the employee, within the employees' minds and the issues that concern them, differs to what HR or the organization might be concerned with versus what companies are actually doing in between that. So often there's a gap, right? And in chatting with some of the employees, some of the top issues on their minds include job security, of course, number one. And that's a major concern for most employees at this point in time, recognizing that a number of non-essential businesses are impacted. So for organizations such as the one that I am employed with, we provide an essential service and a significant percentage of our staff continue to work today. However, the way we work has changed in light of the nature of COVID-19 and the social implications for transference of the virus based on the number of people working collectively in our environment. So we've had to engage now a rostering of staff, which employers who are deemed essential now have to consider in terms of numbers, rostering staff, not particularly looking at an 8-hour workday, but rather productivity and a shift system as well, which gives you an extension of the workday, although we're limited by the health ordinance now in terms of the hours of operations. But in terms of a shift system to manage the numbers, especially for those in warehousing, such as us, or in the pharmaceuticals industry as well. So employees are definitely concerned about job security and of course, personal health as well. And for employers who provide employee assistance programs, this is actually a critical service at this point in time because a number of employees are also dealing with the psychological impact of staying at home, of social isolation. It's terms that we hear bandied about, but not necessarily considering the psychological impact of all of this and how it impacts your workers, the employees at this point in time. And to reinforce, according to Stephanie, in terms of the communication, they also communicate for those who have EAP services that this service is still available and how they could access it during this time as well. Because you may very well find that employees actually need the service during this time. The other key thing is childcare and homeschooling. Now, for those who are working at home and have children and have the additional responsibility for homeschooling as well as the commitment to delivering still while at home, there's a balancing act that has to take place there. And that's the employee's concern as well. The employer may not necessarily be thinking about that, but it is a concern for the employee and how we now treat with that, especially for those who may not have the support of an extended family to assist with the childcare solutions part of it. And it has been the number one challenge for our organization, especially for single parents, right? Based on the demographic of your organization, you may find yourself with single parents, a single parent home, and the extended family in terms of grandparents not really willing because of the nature of COVID-19 to take care of kids or to be exposed in any way with someone who's going out to work and coming back in. So the whole issue of support is also required. Then personal finances. Now, long before COVID-19, we had sessions in our organization encouraging staff to look at the whole issue of personal finances and planning for retirement, planning for emergencies. And we've often seen, you know, you should have at least 3 to 6 months of your salary saved, right? So that should a time like this, that what we're experiencing now happen, you have something you could fall back on. But not everybody's in a position right now where that is concerned. So employers who would have traditionally had staff access loans or facilities like that, they now find themselves not being able to provide temporary loans or financial assistance to members of staff as well too. So that's a real concern for some of the employees out there. Then remote work. Now before COVID-19, especially for our country, the concept of remote work wasn't totally embraced, at least not for the majority of organizations. Multinationals would have tend to have it in some degree. Right? But most firms didn't embrace the concept, nor did we embrace flexible working arrangements like what this has forced us to do now, right? So it means employees are they themselves adjusting to the concept of working remotely and not necessarily having the benefit of a department or the social interaction that naturally comes by being in the workplace. And then it means managers have to manage differently now in terms of accounting for productivity and accounting for actually the work that the employees are doing during this period of working remotely as well. So it means companies must now have policies and procedures to govern how we manage the employment relationship under remote work, right? And the concept of remote work. And it may be easy to say, yes, use your personal laptop because we do not have laptops for everyone, for example, because resources is also an issue, especially for organizations who may not have necessarily had to deal with this so quickly, right? May not have benefited from planning or ordering additional laptops, etc. So you're working with the resources that you have. And then Kamala, you spoke earlier this morning about the IT session you had. There's a risk with employees using their own personal computers and laptops and working with it, and the whole issue of confidential information that belongs to the organization as well, and even taking phone calls while remotely working, and may have your family around. So you're trying to work at home, trying to deal with the organization's business, but yet confidentiality becomes an issue, as well as the information data protection as well. Then the viability of the employer is heavily on the employee's mind, and whether or not this business could actually survive this because of the uncertainty that is around COVID-19. When we were chatting before we officially opened this session, we recognized that April 30th, this is not going to be the end. We are not going to be open for business, as we would say, because we still haven't had a vaccine developed as yet, nor can we risk importing or further affecting the numbers of positive cases, right? So it means, therefore, that I'm sure before, within the next week, we'll be getting something from the states in terms of what happens after April 30th. We're already aware that the school term is not going to continue, and we're looking at the third term of this academic year starting September 2020, right? So that in and of itself has implications for members of your staff who have children, right? Recognizing that daycare services are no longer available, the extended family and the risk to the elderly and those who would have traditionally taken care of children, that resource is no longer available because of the risk to them with COVID-19. So that also has to be factored in planning. And what COVID-19 is calling upon us as HR practitioners to do is not only treat with the immediate concerns, but also plan, because you have to have scenario planning taking place. So that should we move to this phase now, what is the next steps, right? So again, it's a matter of addressing the immediate needs now, dealing with all those phone calls. And I could tell you it's a lot of communication you're receiving at this time and a lot of questions coming at you, and planning for what is ahead, right? So that's the position we find ourselves in. Then there's the stress and mental health factor. Now we're seeing a lot of videos posted with odd behaviors, right? There's the infamous one, and then there is neighborly ones as well circulating, right? And the thing is, we may laugh at the whole topic of mental health and not take it as seriously as other countries do, but it's a real factor in mental health and stress and the whole issue of domestic violence and abuse during this time as well. As our employees, remember, our employees exist in communities. Our employees have homes, and some of them do face intimate partner violence, for example. And now that you have everyone at home and the stress factor that goes along with this, they're also subjected to abuse in some form or fashion, and mental health and that kind of support is required at this time. And it's something that we have to think of, not only as the practitioners, but as business owners as well, because it's a real issue and a concern, right? There's also the whole concept of productivity and what productivity means at a time like this and defining it. Because some of your 2020 goals, we all planned and we had great plans for 2020, but COVID kind of shot it out of the, those plans and even budgets that we budgeted and so many things we intended to achieve. I could tell you from an HR perspective, we had trading plans. We had a whole host of things geared up for this financial period. And all of it is blown out of the water because of this, right? So it means the concept of productivity has to also be redefined, because what we had as KPIs and deliverables now has to change to incorporate this as well too. So it's a number of things that are on the employee's mind. And for HR now, whereas some of it may marry or maybe similar, right? There are other things that we have to factor in as well. Because now we have to look at reducing expenses, because I am certain CEOs are now asking us to examine the whole concept of expenses. And when we look at the expenses associated with most organizations, 70 to 80% is associated with staff, if you were to analyze it. So as Stephanie was saying, in terms of the temporary layoffs, in terms of the whole issue of leave and what leave employees have, which is a cost to an organization as well, expenses and how we address that for sustainability and viability of the organization comes into question. So we now have to contact the ECA, for example, and find a way to guide organizations so that we don't have the knee-jerk kind of reaction that you find taking place. Because sometimes CEOs want you to respond and respond very quickly when you're trying to guide them legally, because you're also trying to minimize the legal risk to the organization, as well as keep a business viable and open. Basically, that's what it stands amount to, right? So for us, we would have had meetings with both unions. We unionized and we met with them before. And we agreed up to April 30th what the approach would be. But now we have to consider life after April 30th. And the fact is, what we agreed upon initially will have to change. And it's a community response that is required. So it's not us versus them, it's not the employer versus the union, as the case may be, but recognizing that we all have to share in the responsibility for what happens next, right? And at least there's a bit of support from the state in terms of some of the grants, right? So it's our role as well, in addition to making those decisions, assisting employees with accessing grants, et cetera, for those who are affected materially, who are unable to pay rent, who are unable to buy groceries, et cetera, right? And again, concerns differ organization to organization. So what my organization might be able to do may be very well different to what another organization will be able to do, right? And we still have, because of the nature of our organization, the ability to get some work in between, like procuring goods that the state may need, providing pharmaceuticals, et cetera. But a number of organizations won't have that option at this point in time. So therefore, it means the whole issue about how we address that conversation around reducing expenses with the CEOs and the boards, for example, has to be factored in and it has to be guided accordingly, right? And then managing remote work. I know I said it earlier, but a lot of managers are not prepared for doing that. How many of them are right now communicating with members of their departments, checking up on them, checking up on the work, following up on things that has to be still submitted? Because for us as an organization, we have to provide reports in terms of what is costing the company right now for some of the decisions the organization has taken for dealing with it. It has to be cost. It has to be costed. We have to look at cash flow projections. So the work doesn't stop. You know, some of us have to continue working and preparing for the future while we address the immediate concerns of employees right now. And I just wanted to start with that and the fact that we'll be now called upon to protect jobs while balancing the sustainability of the organization as well too. And it puts us sometimes in a conflicting role, but it's something that we have to balance as HR practitioners and as advisors to CEOs and boards of organizations in terms of how we approach some of these critical questions. And you recognize everything I've shared thus far has a cost. So the EAP has a cost, everything has a cost to it. But at the same time, we must recognize these are the same employees who contributed to the successes of our organizations, the profits that are probably stored there that would have allowed you to do things up to a particular point, right? So it's not our job to just cast employees aside at this point in time, but to provide as much support as possible. And also too, we don't want after this is over to have to now go recruiting and looking to train or bring on new people when we could try our best to find ways collectively to remain viable and to keep employees within the pool until this is over, whenever it's over, right? So that will be, you know, my initial contribution to discussions thus far.
Yes, All right. Thank you so much, Kavel. That was indeed a lot of very excellent food for thought. So, Shane, can we go to you now and get from you an idea of what really are some of the issues and challenges that you have seen in Barbados?
Okay. All right. Well, again, good morning to everyone. And thank you for having Barbados on the call. The beauty of speaking last in any forum is that you really get a chance to say ditto, I agree with all the points made, and then you don't have to say too much. And I think that all the points made from a technical standpoint, from a legislative standpoint, given that there are some similarities in our legislation, and with respect to best practice from an HR standpoint, those are commonalities that exist across the borders, so to speak. What I want to start by saying, though, is more so to draw a reference to something that I think we all are familiar with, and that is in relationships, and that is romantic relationships, relationships with friends, and so on. And just think about that conversation, that awkward conversation, when some person looks at you and says, you know, this relationship is over. It is not you, it is me. And the feeling that you have when you go through that type of experience, even if the person tries to soften it by saying, no, you didn't do anything wrong, you leave that experience feeling terrible, feeling that something is not right about what you did, and not being happy about the whole experience. And I say that, and I've said that to clients, to frame the layoff experience that is very common now around COVID, because that is what is happening. You have organizations that are quickly resorting to laying off persons, largely to manage their financial position. And that is the feeling that persons are walking away from. So I like persons to kind of put themselves in that mindset because it gives you a more holistic view of what this experience is. I think we all understand the financial decision. The company that I work with, Profiles, we would have done a short kind of pulse survey with the general public, just to get a feel. And one of the points that came back quite strongly is that persons understand the financial decision. Persons understand what is happening in the economy and in their organizations. And that is a function of information being shared and so on. The critical part, though, is how do you go about when you have to make that separation, if that is the decision that you have to make. So I know that you would have asked me to speak about the Barbados context, the Barbados experience. But again, I'll frame that within looking at a couple of different buckets. And if we think about our employees holistically, and I know that Cavell would have really spoken quite in depth to this point, you have to look at your employees holistically. So yes, the business has to make a financial decision, and ultimately it's for the longevity of the business. But I will challenge that. I will challenge that to say that many times the organizations are making reactive responses, and I've seen that, where it is a matter of we're not making revenue, and as you would appreciate, Barbados is very much a tourism-based destination. So obviously with no tourism going on, many of our entities, whether directly or indirectly, are impacted. And you're seeing persons just sending home persons, and sometimes utilizing things like the last in, first out method and so on, if other suitable information to make decision is lacking. I challenge whether or not that's a strategic decision, because while it is to respond to the current financial situation, if you are just releasing persons who are strategically valuable to the business, and then you put yourself in a position when it comes to rehiring that you have to start from scratch, you've lost a considerable amount of institutional knowledge. So the process oftentimes that I'm seeing is flawed, where it is very much a knee-jerk reaction. It is very much, we need to try to get back on reasonable keel as fast as possible. Let's start to cut persons from that line item, which tends to be the biggest one, which is people. So that is one of the things that I'm seeing from a lot of organizations. And if you look at it more long-term, when an organization behaves in that kind of reflex manner or reactive manner, it has long-term implications for the business. It has implications for the business's reputation and employer brand. So when it comes to trying to hire persons in the future, you have a reputation that may not necessarily be the best one in the market. You have a reputation that may stain or impact how the public wants to interface with your brand in the future. I draw reference to the example with Nokia. I think that was in Germany back in 2008, when they had a fantastic year the previous year. Things started to dip the following year and the release stopped. And the way that they were released, ultimately Nokia felt the blow later on, where the public, where the government responded in a very aggressive way that they saw the business impact. So one of the things that I am seeing on the ground is while businesses are reverting to layoff at an early stage, and understandably so, I have a challenge in many cases with the approach being taken into how we will choose who are the persons laid off. So within your own context, that is one of the things I would want to draw to employers' mind, that is to have a very structured and a strategic manner wherever possible in how you go about laying off persons and not simply a knee-jerk reaction. When it comes as well, and again, I think Cavell not even hinted, I think she made mention of this, that as employers, we have a responsibility to treat the employees in a particular manner. And if we really believe in employee well-being and looking at employees holistically, then are we considering the person's emotional well-being? Are we considering the physical impact? Are we considering the social impact? All of these things, even in the way that we go about laying off persons or whatever action we're taking, are we thinking about these things holistically? And I know that Stephanie made mention early on about communication. I would say that I've seen a major improvement in local organizations and how they've gone about communicating. We encourage over-communication. So let persons know, similar to what Stephanie said, let them know the real financial impact. Don't speak about it in a nebulous fashion. Let persons understand. And when persons understand, they are more keen and more willing to work with you. If persons believe that you're not being truthful and honest about the position of the company, they will be less accepting to the decisions that you're taking. I know that there are some employers that believe that persons don't understand, persons don't care about that, and so on. And I challenge that perspective. I challenge it because there's so much information in the market that persons understand business in some form or fashion. You have so many persons who are now, quote unquote, having a side hustle that they understand finance a bit better than maybe 15 or 20 years ago. So your employees want to know, they want to understand. So I believe that communication is critical. In some organizations that I've seen navigate this quite well, what they've done is literally every day have an employee huddle to let persons know, this is the current situation. This is where we are when it comes to getting stock. This is where we are with respect to our current stores, stock that's coming in, receivables, and what that means for our cash flow position. And those organizations have had much better conversations than those where persons essentially walked in one morning and were told that they were being released. So I think that the communication is critical. It will never be an easy discussion, but it allows for the recovery to be a lot more amenable to the actions that are being taken. One point that was made that I believe our experience is a little bit different with respect to our legislation and vacation. We do have a lot of employers who are sending persons on vacation. And the language of our legislation suggests that vacation is given by the employer and taken by the employee. So employers are empowered by legislation to send persons on vacation. However, that is being, I would dare say, abused in some cases, not all. And in many cases, it is where persons are not seeking professional advice on how to go about it. Our legislation speaks to giving employees 2 weeks notice prior to sending them on that vacation. So if you come to agreement, which again is a function of communication, then it is fine. If you tell employees this is the position and we give you the opportunity to request vacation, which means you're guaranteed pay, as opposed to having to wait on the social security system, then persons are a lot more amenable to it. If, however, a person is saying today that I am sending you on vacation tomorrow, there's a legislative breach and one that can have punitive, that can cause or lead to punitive damages later on if that employee challenges it. So we do have the vacation issue presenting itself, but I think if you have solid leadership, if you have good HR advice, these are things that you can work around based on engaging the employees in a way that they respect, that they feel that they've been treated humanely, and then are comfortable to work with the business to find the best possible solution out of what we are seeing now. So I will leave my comments there at this point.
Yeah. All right, thank you so much, Shane. I really appreciate that, and particularly the fact that you drew to our attention the impact of how employees feel when you have to separate with them. Even if you say, it's not you, it's me. I am the one who has no revenue and I can't do it. So we need to keep that in mind, because there are a number of our companies who really are faced with that position now where they have no choice. So there were a couple of comments and questions, I think, which we have on the chat line. So there's a question from someone that says, is VSEP an option? And I want to ask that question along with the consideration, right? So there's another question. Is it okay for companies to continue paying NIS health surcharge and health plans for employees during a period of temporary layoff? And all this, keeping in mind that companies may need to mitigate against legal risk. This is also a contribution here. To mitigate against legal risk in the light of HR litigation issues during and after COVID. So may I ask Stephanie, if you can take these particular questions in terms of, so you're owner of a small business, whether it's a restaurant that now has moved to curbside delivery, but nothing close to the turnover you would have had when you were opening 24 hours, and therefore you don't need the number of staff. Or you own a retail store where you would have had 15 to 20 employees, the store is now closed, there's absolutely nothing that you can do. You were prepared to pay employees for the initial 2 weeks of the stay at home, but now it's been extended, you don't have that money coming in. And most importantly, as Cavell drew to our attention, this stay at home is likely to be extended. So companies are looking at the possibility of layoffs. What would be your advice and guidance here?
Okay, so I just wanted to touch base on the that one with the about the NIS and health surcharge. Mm-hmm. Now, NIS and health surcharge and normally would go with an income, because NIS is based on your income and health surcharge is deducted from income. So when I talk about employers considering payments of these things, it's to pay the employees some level of compensation for the month that would allow deductions to continue, even though the NIS might be a smaller contribution. But the fact is the employee remains a registered contributor for that period of time. So it allows them to have access to claims 10 weeks and 13 weeks and so when the time comes. And of course, health surcharge is government tax. And for health plans, if it is, you also deduct from whatever you pay the person, you can continue the health plan, you know, to be active. Health plans might allow companies to have some, you know, deferred payments and so down the road. But you would find that employees then will have a difficulty if you defer those contributions to have a big deduction 2-3 months down the road. So in trying to pay some level of compensation for the month that can cover certain things, you still allow the employees to be covered. So that's where that would come from. When it comes to the layoff or the retrenchment, you said that somebody asked the question, is VSEP an option? And VSEP is always an option.
Tell me that question. Yes.
Yes, VSEP is always an option. Of course, as we have all said, you first consider, can I keep these persons employed? Now, employed might not mean actively working, because you might not have any work to do, but you keep them on your payroll. And keeping them on the payroll means you're not going to lay them off in the sense with no pay, Or you might keep them on the payroll just knowing that they are still employees. You haven't fired, terminated, retrenched, and therefore they remain on your payroll and you pay something even though they are not working. VSEP comes along, of course, and somebody raised a question as well that after a while you might realize, hey, I could make some positions redundant. But even in, I said this in a previous conversation, that even Apple and Google insist on their employees coming to the office. So working from home as a substantive, normal, long-term thing is not typically the norm. You would find that there is still some requirement to come into an office. If you have clients to meet, you have to do sign documents and different things. There's an extent to which how much you can do at home. Some jobs are fully online. You can do those, but not all. The majority will still be to come into the office to do something or the location, for instance, in manufacturing and all of that. So it's limited as to whether so many jobs will become redundant. VSEP always goes with redundancy. So VSEP is an option instead of forced separation, which is retrenchment. VSEP is a voluntary separation. So when the organization has identified, we no longer need so many positions or we no longer need a particular position, it is now surplus to our operations, you can decide that we can release 15 persons, but there will be 15 persons in particular types of jobs. So VSEP is not running just, you know, any and everybody. An organization always has to determine which skills they can afford to do without, even when you introduce a VSEP program. So that level of assessment as to what is needed for the future, which skills we should retain, which we can do without, et cetera, will still have to be done before you implement a VSEP. The unions always consider VSEP retrenchment, but as far as they're concerned, you're sending people home. But it is the voluntary part of a separation when you have assessed your organization's needs from a skill level and a numbers level as far as the functions of the organization. Anything else there for me?
Yeah, actually, I want to follow up on that a little bit because I want to ask, so suppose you have an organization whereby you weren't satisfied with how some employees were performing. And now you have this opportunity which says, well, you're going to shut down business for a while because government has told you you were non-essential. So therefore, you have an opportunity to rethink your business structure, possibly re-engineer some of your processes to be different. And now you want to send home some employees. And okay. You're sending home employees because you were unhappy with their performance in the past. What should a company like that pay attention to?
Well, first of all, we will say that in industrial relations, we call that dismissal under the guise of retrenchment, okay? If you are unhappy about person's employee's performance, you should be treating with it from a disciplinary point of view, performance management, and finding a way you do your performance improvement plans, etc. And if the person just cannot fit the role and is unable to do what is required, you eventually will have to terminate the employee's services for inability to perform. But you don't use a retrenchment or restructuring to get rid of employees. You do have to justify, as I said before, what are the skills you need for the work that you have to do? And perhaps some of those persons will fall into the category of those of surplus jobs and so. But soon enough, a union, and remember, even though a company might not be unionized, employees still have access to a union. They may go and get representation. And the employer could find himself in what you will call manipulating the whole restructuring to dismiss persons under the guise of retrenchment. So you have to be very cautious in what you do and not use that. However, if you might have, as the union will also tell you sometimes, you're not going to keep the worst employees in the organization. So you might have to consider in assessing who will remain in certain types of jobs and find a way to do that, you know, in a very transparent and justifiable way, but not to simply say, I am going to design my restructuring in such a way that these 10 employees who have been giving me trouble, and the employees can now show, hey, this company was trying to fire me for the last 6 months, and they introduced a retrenchment program, and only the 10 employees who were being disciplined or being managed out are now retrenched. You're going to lose your case in court, okay? Mm-hmm.
Understand. Okay, so there is a question as well from Suraj. As far as retrenchment is concerned, Suraj, can I ask you to unmute your mic and ask the question? Is that possible?
Yeah, sure. Thanks everyone for your contribution. So yeah, as far as retrenchment is concerned, is there a recommended way? Should LIFO be one of those options, or should it be just strictly based on performance?
Okay, well, Suraj, is never based on performance. First of all, it's based on retrenchment comes about when skills become redundant, positions become redundant, there's a surplus of those skills in the organization. And therefore, you then decide to retrench. So LIFO comes in where you have individuals who are in the same position, who are able to do the job that remains in the company, and who, by virtue of being eligible for the positions that are now required by the organization or that remain in the organization and the structure, you make a decision based on who joined last and who joined first. So the last in, first out principle is applied there. But you have to look at really the skill level and the talent that you need to perform the functions that will remain in the organization and the numbers of persons you need for those particular functions. And then that is when you use last in, first out to send home. Sometimes you have the odd situation where someone was transferred from a one division or was just promoted into another position. And now you make that new position redundant. You have a challenge there. You may have to make a decision in that case to keep that person in another position, what we will call maybe grandfather them into this old position because they have been there for 20 years. And the newer person who might have been put into the job will be the one to go, even though the job that this person is doing is still required, but they would have joined just maybe 6 months ago. And this other person who just was promoted is now to be sent home. You don't send home that person, even though it might be two different jobs. So you have those unique situations, but generally it is not simply based on who are the good performers. I will keep those.
Okay, excellent. Thank you so much, Stephanie. I'm noting all that it's 11 o'clock already, and I know that is the time we had allocated for this online session. So possibly what I could do is ask our panelists to wrap up. If there are any burning questions or comments, please put it in the chat and we could probably address it as we do the wrap up. So can I go to Kaval first for her closing comments, then Shane, and then we'll come back to you, Stephanie. So if there are any questions from anyone that needs to be addressed with respect to laying off employees, then so you can treat with it at that point. So Kaval, can we get your closing remarks, please?
Well, I just want to share with everyone that some of the biggest HR challenges right now, we're dealing with COVID-19, will of course be the difficulty that we will now encounter with coordinating our responses across teams and business units and even geographies at this point in time, at a time where social distancing is the norm and at a time where employee engagement is required to be at a higher level. However, because of what's happening, we have to find creative ways for doing that, for keeping employees engaged and informed while and coordinating work while we practice social distancing, right? The other thing or the other challenge is the two-way communication and the fact that it is not as effective as it could best be during this time, because Stephanie spoke earlier about the fact that we would have been required, and we did the same thing, getting WhatsApp numbers, people's numbers who didn't have company-issued cell phones, getting email addresses, etc., and creating these WhatsApp groups. But most of the time, that tends to be a one-way type of communication, and the feedback loop is sometimes missing in a time like this. So therefore, HR is now challenged with managing two-way communication during this period. And then we also face the challenge of not adjusting fast enough to help our customers, and our customers are the employees internally first and foremost, and of course all the service providers that we have, so the insurance, the group insurance providers, the health plan providers, etc., right? So we have to be a little bit more responsive as well to in addressing some of the issues and still processing claims, etc., because while COVID-19 happens, life happens as well too, and employees who had normal medical emergencies or issues, we're still processing those things as well. And of course, the agility that is required at this point in time. HR has been accused in the past of sometimes being too slow, right? And maybe slow because we've taken measured approaches to things, but right now we're required to be a little bit more agile and responsive to a rapidly changing situation. And this could change as as quickly as this afternoon when the Prime Minister addresses the country later after Cabinet today, right, in terms of some new directive that may come out that we now have to respond to. So it requires a bit of agility on our part in terms of how we address and provide guidance to the organization going forward as well. So that would just be some of my closing remarks in terms of what's required of us in dealing with this particular challenge, which is very unique and unprecedented. For most of us, we would not have experienced something like this before. And I think, Kamala, in terms of what you've done here, and even creating a network where we could draw on each other in terms of for guidance and shared experiences, et cetera, is important as well too. And Stephanie did say ECA is also available. So of course we will definitely be contacting the ECA should we need that guidance based on what comes next, right? Because right now we're okay, but we have to also prepare for what's next. So that will be my closing remarks.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much, Cavell. And as you mentioned, Stephanie's remarks, I want to share too. So the ECA will be having a session on the 21st of April where they would be looking at this whole issue of retrenchment. So persons who need to be considering these things may want to make sure that they log on to the ECA's website and register so that you could get some more information with that. So thank you, Cavell. I really appreciate, as you say, it's so clear. HR has so many different considerations that you must take into account before guidance is given. And it's not just the expenses, which the CEO will always ask you about, but it is the emotional health of the employees and the well-being of the organization in the long run. And so, yes, slow sometimes, but I appreciate, as you said too, we need to be agile at this time. We don't know all that is coming at us. All right, Shane, can we ask you for your wrap-up, please?
Right. I would say, well, there are a few points. So one is to be strategically focused. I think that any decisions that are made need to be strategically anchored and not just merely reactive to what is going on. But I think HR needs to be able to agitate senior leadership or fellow senior leadership to say, okay, what are we going to do? When we come out of this, what will we look like? And in so doing, be able to identify the skills that you would need. So rather than even having to take long-term retrenchment action, possibly trying to redeploy your workforce in a way that is aligned to the new direction of the business. So I think that that's one of the first things that needs to be happening now. There needs to be that strategic level conversation. Outside of that, very much on the boat, on the ground type of activity, in the event that persons will be released from the business, let's say, I think that we need to support supervisors and our managers more. I still think that there's this belief that when a person becomes a supervisor or a manager, they suddenly wake up the next day with all of the skills. And I think that this has been a forgotten group. During this crisis, where they are the ones that are dealing with the employees on a daily basis, but remotely, they're the ones that are charged to make to have those difficult conversations to possibly to lay off persons or sever. And they are struggling. They are struggling with the emotional burden of it all. So while we're talking about mental health and emotional well-being, I think that as companies, we need to pay even more attention to those groups because they're the survivors. They're the ones that will need to continue through all of this. So yes, we have to consider the employees that we are releasing and how we support them. But we also need to pay close attention to the managers and to also the other employees that will be continuing in the business. And then finally, for those persons who are made to exit the business, we need to do that in as respectful a manner as possible to maintain and respect those individuals and their dignity. So again, being able to share, being able to communicate to them how you will support them as best as possible during this transition if there is no other choice. It really needs to be a situation where there's no other opportunity to use these persons or for the business to operate. There's no work that can be done and articulate that. And I think persons will understand it. And wherever possible, use the EAP services, use outplacement services to help those persons make the transition. And believe me, that will reverberate throughout the business as persons are watching how those individuals are treated too. So I think for me, those are some of the key things. But at the bottom of it all the decisions need to be strategically anchored.
Yes. Okay, thank you so much, Shane. Stephanie, as I go to you, I just want to recall a contribution I had heard you make in another session, and that was persons may think that because you have this extenuating circumstances where government has said you can't operate as a business, so you have no revenue, and so therefore they have no choice but to send home employees. You were sharing that there is a similar situation that would have happened when PetroTrend closed down, and a lot of the small firms who had contracts with PetroTrend, and therefore their entire revenue stream was dependent on that contract, and then suddenly it was gone, and they would have sent home employees, but those employees did not all accept that the company had a right at that point to fire them because there was no revenue. And as a result, several of those are still matters that are before the court. So I just wanted to make sure that we drive home this point to organizations that it may not be a simple matter if you feel you have no revenue, because something you pointed out in this discussion earlier as well, that employees are not supposed, they expect that the employers and not simply being reactive to what is happening in the environment at the moment, but that they should have been looking at global trends and the local trends and anticipating that to keep them in employment. So your closing comments, please, Stephanie. Are you there with us, Stephanie?
Okay, my apologies, I was muted. Yes, it is not so much, yes, just to add to what you were saying, when it comes to the PetroTrend issue, it was not that the employees did not accept they had to be trained. There was no work. There was no need for them. Contracts were just arbitrarily closed, not even given the right notice, etc., by PetroTrend to the employer, to the new the subcontractors. But what you found is that the employers were still awaiting monies and are still awaiting monies from PetroTrend, and therefore they could not pay the severance fee. And that is why they're in court, because you have 30 days after the expiration of the date of the notice period within which to pay. And for some of them, even though they tried to pay in tranches or installments, they have not been able to do so. And some of the employees, not all of them, some of them have taken them to court. And the court, I was saying that the court has to consider these things, and it is aggravated now by the COVID-19 situation for some employers. They might have laid off 50% and now they have to lay off more persons, but the fact is they have no money. What do they do in paying severance pay? That's a major issue that's going to happen. And I just wanted to add to what Shane was saying, and to, is it Christy, right? That indeed employers have to consider whether to keep people or not, not just to decide my numbers say 10 and I'm keeping 10. Can you keep people a little longer? Can you have work? But remember, if you have no work for someone to do, you don't keep them in an organization for them to come in with nothing to do. So we have a challenge, a real challenge. Somebody made a comment here that maybe we have to reduce brick and mortar in going forward. That has been tried and tested, and it continues. We still have brick and mortar. But there is a fact, some of the things can be done remotely, and that will definitely happen. But employers must understand, and this is where boards and so come in, because it's about corporate governance. When we as employers send employees home very quickly without exploring whether there's possible work, and even perhaps you offer jobs at a different level, you would find that there's a burden on the state to deal with all those persons who are not in jobs. They either have to get public assistance, they end up having to go to the hospitals, that's more expense without having a health plan, etc. And long term, when they reach age 65, the state has to provide them with pensions. We right now pay $3,500 to every person who is so eligible. And what you would find is that the burden on the state becomes greater and greater as people lose jobs and are not in full employment to retirement age and are eligible then to have some form of income that does not require the state. Now, why is that important to us as employers and as citizens, as individuals? It is our taxpayers' money that should be used for infrastructure development and all these new digitization and so that the country needs, that we are now taking it and simply having to give handouts. We end up also having a workforce and a citizenry that is underproductive, that are, you know, low self-esteem, because an unemployed man is not a highly esteemed person. And therefore you find there are very close connections with every one of us as employers and as citizens to understand keeping people in gainful employment has a long-term impact and a socioeconomic impact on our country and our own people. As an individual, as a citizen, you want to know that you have a sound, productive citizenry in any country.
Yes, that is really, really excellent. Thank you so much, Stephanie. I really appreciate that. Let me just go to the chat a little bit, because I saw some really excellent contribution from persons. Those of you who said, thank you for this session. I am really appreciative of you for coming in and joining us. The reality is, at CCGI, we recognize how important it is to ensure that persons understand the implications of many of the changes that are happening, and therefore there are really no knee-jerk reactions from organizations, which, you know, they would they will regret in many responses. So actually, there are just too many comments. I'm not going to be able to go through all of them, but thank you all very much for joining us in today's session. I think we could have gone on for another hour because there's so much to discuss, but I think we have really touched on the key issues to leave persons with food for thought. And therefore, please, everyone, let's try to have that vision for the type of society we want to have. And let us work towards that in the best way we can. Yeah? So that's it. Thank you all for staying the extra 15 minutes with me. The panelists, thank you guys so, so very much. Stephanie, I really appreciate your wealth of knowledge. Cavell, you are such a trooper. You know, you've been such a great asset to us for our sessions. Shane, we are so happy to welcome Barbados. As the Caribbean Corporate Governance Institute, we have a responsibility to embrace the region and ensure that we have a regional dialogue going that helps us to appreciate each other's challenges, each other's strengths, and be there to help build this Caribbean to be what we want it to be. Thank you all very much and have a wonderful and productive rest of the day.
Thank you.
Bye. Same to everyone. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. Everyone.